Happy day. I'm Liza, your healing mentor. I used to say, all I need in life is for my kids to be happy and healthy. The problem was they weren't happy and they weren't healthy. Both my kids had anxiety, depression, and even Lyme disease. Then one day my daughter told her therapist, what would make me happy is if my mom was happy. So I went on a journey to find my own personal happiness. When I finally became happy, my own kids accelerated in their own healing journey. Now I share my stories, my mindset, and other inspirational healers with you. Let's heal one story at a time. Happy day. Welcome to Very Happy Stories. Such an amazing episode for you today. I just got schooled by the Lyme boss herself, Heather Gray. Heather Gray is a functional diagnostic nutritionist practitioner. She found this work after being undiagnosed with Lyme disease, celiac, Hashimoto, and endometriosis for 27 years. She was depressed, anxious. She had chronic widespread pain, constipated, bloated, just to name a few things. And she set out on this path to healing. And she has now lost over 100 pounds. And she's also pain-free. She no longer lives with suicidal thoughts and she has all-day energy. So today, Heather, the Lyme boss, has a practice where she teaches others how to take care of themselves and how to get the inflammation out of their brain and out of their body. Now, this podcast episode ran a little long, but that's because we covered everything. And when I mean everything, I mean everything that your doctor will not tell you about autoimmune disorders or illnesses and Lyme. We go over all of it. Just to name a few things that we talk about in this episode, our toxin loads, how to actually heal the gut, parasites, heavy metals, celiac, IBS, candida, yeast. Did I mention Lyme and mold? Maybe I did. But more than that, how all of these puzzle pieces fit together and why and how they matter and how to resolve these issues. So consider this your free consultation with the Lyme boss. This is Heather's Very Happy Story. Happy day. Welcome to the podcast, Heather.
Woohoo. Excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. Gosh, I can't wait to get into your story because just from a personal perspective, I want to know so much more about this stuff, especially your autoimmunes. And I mean, I've got two of your three. So this is quite exciting. I feel like I'm going to learn so much today.
Oh, no pressure.
Well, why don't you just introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit more about you and we can roll into your story too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
I've been labeled the Lyme boss and I just recently rebranded into that in the past year and a half. After, you know, my own health journey kind of led me from the Western medicine world to the alternative world because I wanted to live and I wanted to have all my organs and everything still working as I got older. So I kind of had to dig a little deeper and find a little different path other than just, you know, putting band-aids on things and are cutting things out, which seems to be, you know, the typical Western model, which, you know, if you're in a car accident, you know, oh my gosh, you can't get anything better about putting you back into one piece again. But as far as like chronic health and disease prevention goes, there's just not a lot of great options there, like I said, other than band-aids and surgery. So
I agree. When it comes to root cause, long-term healing, ultimately feeling better, it's a different journey, right? There's a lot to navigate there. So I had just read in your bio that you were undiagnosed with Lyme for 27 years. And you had various autoimmune illnesses, including celiac, Hashimoto, and what am I missing?
Endometriosis.
And endometriosis. So I think a lot of moms could relate to this of like having one thing after another, but not really understanding what is it the root cause and how to even get better. So tell us a little bit more about your story. Like, what did it feel like all those years of being undiagnosed? Like, what were some of your symptoms? And then how did you finally come to some of these diagnoses?
Absolutely. Yeah, I usually start all the stories at the beginning when I tell people that I was basically born full of shit. I remember being constipated at a very, very young age and sitting on the potty for so long.
It's my daughter.
Would fall asleep, right? But I also found out right around that time that my uncle had killed himself. So we had some early childhood trauma going on. And also that I was, you know, undiagnosed celiac at the time. I imagine that trauma probably turned on those genes. And then so our standard American diet, right, didn't help. So here I am, very constipated, you know, kiddo. And that's started with the whole, let's throw Band-Aids at symptoms. You know, the doctors were just putting nasty thick oils down my throat, stool softeners, but nobody was trying to get to the root cause of why this four-year-old was so constipated, right? So then fast forward quite a few more years, and I'm now in high school and I'm going through puberty, and I've got, you know, all these years of undiagnosed celiac going on.
Wow.
And early childhood trauma. And so then when I did get bit by a tick, it was like a perfect storm, right? I was like the perfect host, because not everybody who gets bit by a tick gets Lyme disease, right? There's a lot of us that our immune systems can keep it where it's supposed to be. But when you have the early childhood trauma, when you have the crappy diet, when you have the stress, when you have, you know, the other autoimmune stuff already kind of in play, like I said, I just became the perfect host, but didn't show symptoms till about 2 years later when I had my first stint in the psych ward for a suicide attempt, and then had a few more in my early 20s, mid 20s, and then finally was diagnosed back in 2013. I mean, you name every kind of prescription drug, you know, antipsychotic, mood stabilizer, antidepressant, you know, type of thing, because nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. They just all said, your labs look normal, but I felt anything but normal.
Right. Well, let me ask you, so as you are having this crisis after crisis of, you know, suicidal ideation and mental health crisis, do you think that that was from being undiagnosed celiac and continuing to eat gluten? I'm sure it's not one thing. Or was it a real genetic component? Knowing what you know now, what do you attribute your mental health crisis to?
D, all of the above. Yeah. When you're malnourished, right? When you've got a leaky gut, you also have a leaky brain. So I was extremely malnourished because I, you know, was constantly eating stuff that was causing inflammation and damage to my gut lining. And the villi were smashed to the, you know, to nothing. And they were picking up no nutrients. So if your body and your brain doesn't have the food and the nutrients that it needs to work properly, there's case one against you. Case two, Lyme disease actually can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause a lot of inflammation. And when it leaves that blood-brain barrier open to where other things now can cross the blood-brain barrier that's not supposed to. So now you've got number two.
So Lyme actually opens it. What opens the brain barrier?
The Lyme disease itself.
Okay.
Like the bacteria itself can actually cross the blood-brain barrier.
Yep. Now you're super vulnerable.
Yep. And then three, early childhood trauma causes a lot of inflammation and a lot of, you know, stuck in fight or flight. And when you're stuck in fight or flight, your body can't heal. When you're in rest and digest, right? If you think about it, you're running away from that tiger. Your body's not trying to think about having sex. It's not trying to think about digesting your food. It's not trying to think about healing. It's trying to think about getting the blood flow to your extremities so you can get the hell out of there and get away from that tiger. You know, so if you're stuck in that fight or flight for that long, it also causes inflammation in the brain and activation of something called microglia, which causes more inflammation. So that's why I said D, all the above. So it was absolutely a combination of the crappy diet, being celiac, undiagnosed, leaky gut, toxins. If there's the genetic component, because I did have issues in my detox pathways. And so when I come in contact with things like mold and other toxins, I don't detox it properly. So it just gets stored and recirculated in my body. And then the Lyme disease. So yeah, absolutely. It was all the above. And then there was obviously a little genetic component to it as well, because like I said, my uncle had killed himself, you know, so there's definitely, when I did a DNA test on myself not too recently, it talked about how that I had a propensity for anxiety and a propensity to actually make a mountain out of a molehill. You know, it's, that's what I've been told my whole life. Why do you always got to make such a big deal out of things? It was actually the way I was wired. And just because you're wired that way doesn't mean that you can't actually do things to affect how those genes get expressed. And I have since then been able to calm a lot of that stuff down. And I no longer make mountains out of molehills, and I'm actually in control over my moods for like the first time in my life.
That's so huge. Just having the awareness that you have this propensity, you can do things that we can go into later to help you from like manifesting all of this stuff to happen then, like you were saying, kind of like reprogram yourself, I guess, is
absolutely
what I'm saying.
And what a gift it is to not beat myself up over being a certain way, right? The grace that came from having that knowledge of this is how I'm wired. Because my whole life I've been beat up for being too much and too this and too that. And it's like, when you can finally look at that and look at yourself as a whole and love all the good and the bad and everything in between, like, man, what a gift that has been, you know, over the past couple of years digging through. Like, I think that's probably one of the most beautiful things that have come out of all this crap was just learning a new level of grace.
Yes.
For myself.
Yes. Okay. And so much of your story, gosh, as you were rolling through everything, I just thought of my own child, my firstborn, who really, like, I passed on this congenital load of Lyme. She was undiagnosed autistic. And so she felt so many things on such a grand scale that she did have like a lot of trauma. Right. And then she did get hit by tick. She went to summer camp and it was like this perfect storm. So, I do understand completely what you're saying. It's interesting because our story unfolded, how we got to Lyme was through her eating disorder, which was basically a mental health crisis of brain inflammation, right? I'm curious, how did you get to your diagnosis? I had asked you questions about your mental health crisis, but you were saying you ended up in the psych ward. When did you kind of hit the Lyme iceberg or an autoimmune tip of the iceberg?
Gosh, those didn't even come until after I finally got my diagnosis of Lyme.
Really?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with nothing until 2013 when I got my diagnosis of Lyme.
How'd you get it?
So crazy and bizarre. Like, there was this practitioner in Denver, which is about 50 miles away from where I live in Colorado. And she was foreign. I can't remember where she was from. She had the coolest accent though. But this girlfriend of mine gave me her number and was like, I'd go through phases where I would like search. And then I would just give up, right? I was exhausted. I got tired of being told I was crazy and that there's nothing wrong with me. And then though I would spiral even deeper and then kind of go back into the whole suicidal things and like hit a wall. And then I'd have to try to dig myself back
up. So you were cycling, you were going through some cycles.
Yep. And it was time again. She was a good friend of mine and also a psychologist. And she's like, Heather, you gotta dig deeper. Did you call her? And not yet. So I finally called her, went literally 5 minutes. I'm talking with this woman for 5 minutes. And she got this little twinkle in her eye. And she's like, in her cool accent, which I can't do. She's like, I know exactly what's wrong with you. And I'm like, and bullshit, flag on the play. Like, what the hell do you mean? You know what the hell's wrong with me? And she's like, have you ever been bit by a tick? I said, yeah, actually, I remember pulling one out of my stomach when I was 13, when I was living in Missouri. And she's like, yeah, this is like slam dunk. I'm pretty sure this is what it is. And, you know, I can't remember. She had me do a test and I can't remember what it came back. I ended up going to do live blood analysis or dark field microscopy. And that's actually how I got to see it.
Wow.
Eyes. And so that was kind of cool. But yeah. And then so you would think, oh, happily ever after, she's got her diagnosis.
Oh, I know better than that.
That was just the beginning of the rest of this next journey. That
just
was
a new chapter is all just, it is, yeah, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now I've got an answer, you know. And as I was leaving Denver, I cried. And I remember the tears streaming down my face. And that's what I screamed was, I told you I'm not crazy. And when I finally get to write my book this year, that's what it's going to be called, is I told you I'm not crazy. The realities of Lyme disease, because so many of us just get dismissed with hypochondriac, you know, attention seeking, you know, you look normal, right? I look normal. I've always looked like this. I don't look anything different. You know, so I never looked sick. I never actually even acted sick for the most part because I couldn't in the household that I grew up in. Sickness, anything weak, oof, no.
You didn't have the permission to
God, no.
be vulnerable.
God, no. God, no. Vulnerability, they'd rip you apart.
Yeah.
So yeah, I never had that luxury.
So you get this diagnosis. Is this woman with this amazing accent, is she able to treat you, or did you have to then find somebody?
Yeah, she was just a physician's assistant who was working in a doctor's office who did specialize in Lyme. Sadly, he did like a lot of Lyme literate doctors do, and they just went after the Lyme, like napalm, throwing napalm.
Kill phase.
Yeah, in a person's body who's been sick for over 30 years, right? Decades. No rebuild, no, how are you pooping? What's your stress level like? How are you sleeping? Nothing. Kill phase. A lot of herbals, a lot of antibiotics, and even an anti-malarial, which totally wiped me out. It was horrible. Like, I thought I was going to die. Even though I had thought I wanted death before, like, once I actually came to what felt like face-to-face with it, I realized that's not what I wanted. And that's when I started to go more of an alternative route. And that's when I heard the founder of FDN speak on a podcast about how you've got to, you know, heal the gut, and you've got to make sure your detox pathways are open, and you got to balance the hormones, and you've got to, you know, you've got to build the host up before you go to war with the host's body. And it just, and it was funny because I was a hairstylist for like 13 years. I didn't have a background in health at the time, but what he said to me intuitively just made sense. And I was like, that's it. That's where I'm going to find my answers. And so it was like killing two birds with one stone, because I did want to get out of the hair industry because my body was falling apart. And I did always have a natural love for the alternative world. Like, I remember getting into herbals and all kinds of supplements back when I was younger, trying to help my brain stuff, my depression. You know, at the age of 18, I was taking, you know, 5-HTP and GABA. And that was the research that I found. But there was no research on nutrition, you know, so I was still going to go eat McDonald's, but I took my 5-HTP right. And I wondered why it didn't work, right? You know, so, you know.
Spoken like a true teenager too.
Right. I'm like, God. But we didn't know any better back then, you know, at McDonald's, that was just a normal, you know, whatever. It's what everybody did, you know, especially in high school, you know, you take your friends, you go to Taco Bell, get your dollar menu and off you go, you know, but didn't realize what a damage and an effect it was having on my brain and the rest of my body. So yeah.
Yeah. I can really relate to that kill phase. I think a lot of us, including my own family, when you get to the diagnosis, you want to see like a top doctor, right? This is an LLMD, Lyme literate MD. A lot of people go to this person. I lived in Chicago. And if you weren't going to go to a major hospital, which you're not going to go to because they don't believe in Lyme, you know, and they're only going to test with the Western blot, you're basically only left with like literally like four practitioners. That's just the way it is. And she just put my kids on kill phase. And it's basically like being in a battle, right? But you're not like, you're going to kill the enemy, but there's like no way, like what's the strategy to clear everybody out? Like what's right. the organ? You got to be right. organized. What's like, you got to clear some pathways. You have to be strategic. Like, how are we going to clean it up? Like, so again, like we didn't have that. And both of my kids started tanking quickly. So I very, very, very much understand what you're talking about. Okay. So you go kind of down this alternative route. And tell us a little bit about that. What did the alternative world offer you that the LLMD did not offer you?
So it's funny, and you can get kind of in trouble even in the alternative world too. And that's one thing I like these platforms to be able to speak on that. And if you didn't get what we were just speaking on, you can't just focus on treatment, right? I can't scream that enough at the top of my
lungs. Say it again.
We can't focus just on treatment. Like, it was so beautiful. I went to a Lyme Bites conference in Connecticut last year, and it was so great. There were 10 practitioners speaking, and all of them got up there and said the same damn thing. Like, I had goosebumps, but there's still too many of them out there that aren't speaking that language. And that's why we need to, you know, inform the masses, right? So even functional world, though, you can still get into trouble. Because I found that out the hard way. I went and saw an acupuncturist, went and saw a functional person. And I even started off that way, really. Here's a lab test, a functional lab test, and here's the supplement to help it. And still nobody was talking about How am I sleeping? What's my stress level like? Am I pooping daily? What kind of water am I drinking? What kind of toxins are in my environment? Like, these lifestyle things have got to get dialed in before you really ever start talking about the kill phase. You got to build a person up, get as much barriers to health, you know, all the toxins, all the crap off the immune system. It's amazing what happens when you put these things into place. A lot of times the body can then take over and do its job. Like, it's, we are really beautifully designed once we can get out of our way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such an important point. Such an important point. The healing environment needs to be addressed, right? And you had even talked about trauma.
Oh, absolutely.
And so even as for a child or an adult, like, you can't heal in the same environment that made you sick. And sometimes that even includes the people, places, and things, the water, the food, the content you take in. Like, it is a lifestyle, and it is a big, big component.
Absolutely. It's so frustrating when people come to work with me, because I think they think that I'm going to be like a doctor and they're going to get a prescription and a pill and a pat on the head and off the door they go. You know, I'm basically going to take your life and dump it upside down and see what works and see what doesn't work and go from there and rebuild, because you can't, you know, if nothing changes, nothing changes, right? The majority of us got here because of the way we were living. You know, it's not just a fight. Right.
Thank you.
Have a really tough time hearing that. I'm like, oh no, I just got bit by a tick. No, I can almost guarantee there was something more going on, but you just didn't realize or put the dots together. You know, so if this got you here, you've got to learn a 180 and start going a different direction and learning new tools in order to get better. Like, period, end of story. And that's why it's great, you know, to work with someone like me who's done that, and it'll hold your hand, but still keep some firm boundaries, because, man, people are really, this lifestyle, this world we live in is not conducive or set up for health.
It's hard.
Period.
It's so hard.
It is so hard. And that's what it feels so isolating to some folks when I put them on this path. They're like, I feel great, but I lost all my friends and where's my family? Like, I haven't talked to my mom in over 3 years. I haven't talked to my dad in over 2. I don't talk to 3 of my siblings. Like, you weren't kidding when you said that, you know, you really got to clean up all the toxins in your life. Like, that can be some of the hardest things to do. My ex-husband because he was actually a toxin, you know. New hubby, totally different ballpark, like, supports me, loves me, cherishes me, calls me adorable. Like, I think that's part of the reason why I've been able to be so successful these last 2 years, that, and I've learned about the trauma piece, the nervous system stuff, and dialed in some other things. But really, having that support and the love of your family, you know, believing in you, right? Validating your experience, like, that's huge.
It's hard. Yeah, it is huge. You're right. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat that message, but I know that it is so triggering for people, because there is such a big accountability piece that people don't want to look at. And look, if you're not ready to look at that accountability piece, then you're not ready, right? But one day you might just get sick enough that you're going to be like, I'm ready to take on the accountability piece. And it is hard and it is isolating, but people that have gone through it, myself included, you come to a place of, you're like, now this is a better way to live. I'm happier. I'm free. I'm empowered. And it's like, there's so much good, like, to get to that other side. Like, it's hard. It is. It really, really is hard.
I just came from a lunch networking group, and I never usually go to meal networking groups because I don't eat out, because I just know what's in that food and I know how bad I'm going to pay for it. I don't want to worry about cross-contamination, and it's just the whole thing, right? But I was like, screw it. I want to be social. This seems like a good group. I want to go. I made my own lunch before I went, and I took it in a thermos, and I asked the waiter very nicely. I said, waiter, I have so many food sensitivities right now. I don't even want to bother you. Can I please just eat my lunch? And he's like, yeah, no problem. And I made the most beautiful sausage, spinach, and carrot soup in my Instapot. It was, took me like 10 freaking minutes. It was delicious. Like, everybody at the table was,
I want that recipe later.
They're like, what are you eating? What are you eating? I was like, it's so good. And I'm looking at everybody else's and I'm like, ah, that's a plate full of ow. That's a plate full of ow. That's a plate full of ow. You're going to pay for that in the bathroom later. You know,
wow.
there's just certain things that you got to do to plan ahead to make, you know, it be successful for you, but it can be done. I'm the most outgoing out there, you know, and I plan ahead. I plan ahead. I put myself first. And that's the other thing that a lot of people, especially mothers, right, with kids, that's hard to hear. You've got to fill your own cup up first. I didn't. And I was undiagnosed when my kid was young. And we're still trying to work through the trauma that I caused him.
Oh, yes.
You know, because I was sick and reactive and angry.
Me too.
Yeah. Who knows how different it would have been if I would have actually put myself first, right? And listened to my body instead of just trying to push through everything and be a good mom. And my kid comes first. No, you come first.
Yeah, it's so true. I actually talk a lot about this when I mentor moms who are going through the PANS and Lyme journey with their kids. And I just had mentioned accountability. There's also a really hard accountability piece to put yourself in, like, what are you contributing to this dynamic with your own child?
Amen. You know? Oh yeah. My gosh.
And it's not shame. It's not guilt. It's just accountability. That's
exactly.
All.
It's just calling a spade a spade. Like it, oh my gosh. So it was funny when I went back, because I had relapsed a few times in the past couple of years, not for the last 2.5 years, but before that I had, because I hadn't dealt with the trauma piece yet. I hadn't dialed in my diet back in again, and I had gained some weight, and I was back to being kind of a reactive, moody bitch, right? And my new husband, God bless him, said, I love you. I don't know what the hell's going on with you, but I can't be married to an angry person anymore. Right. He finally put his foot down and set a healthy boundary. And I think that's the problem with a lot of folks, especially parents with sick kids. They feel so bad that their kid is sick and that they can't help them, that they end up letting them get away with murder and not raising them to a different level that they really can.
I do understand very much. Yes.
The enabling that happens is unbelievable. And it's like, you are not helping your kid. You're only hurting them. And so he stopped enabling me, right? And that's when I pulled my head out of my butt and I started looking, you know, okay, what's this last piece of this journey that I'm, ha ha, last piece. Right. But at the time I was thinking, you know, what's this last piece of the journey that I needed to put into place? And that's when I started learning about, you know, the nervous system and the brain retraining, especially with a lot of mold. Mold is insidious for setting off those alarm bells in your nervous system. And so doing a lot of brain retraining, somatic experience.
Let's talk about that real quick. So a couple of things. Let's talk about how to rewire and the nervous system. What are some specific things that you have learned and that you teach to do this?
So I started off with, the book, The Body Keeps Score. Have you read it?
Yes, I have.
God. I read that book just like ugly bawling on the couch because it's so triggering. Some of the stuff that he talks about is so triggering, but he has some beautiful insights. And like, so I did some of the neurofeedback and I did an ayahuasca journey and I did, there's DRNS, which I actually haven't tried. There's Gupta, which I haven't tried. Somatic experiencing work, which I did become a practitioner in. Heart math.
Yes, heart math. Mm-hmm. So these are all like okay. I mean, you tell me how you would classify these types of things. And we're throwing things out there for the listener, but I find these to be special types of meditative techniques or resetting your vagus nervous system. How do you classify these as?
Yeah, absolutely. Like vagal work, cognitive behavioral type work. But yeah, just getting that nervous system calmed down, because I was always stuck in fight or flight. That's why I was so reactive. I was also very jumpy. And the somatic experiencing work I found to be like huge. The ayahuasca stuff was huge. And then I just recently started this new bioenergetic work that helps to work on that as well, because they're finding out, I like to find the gentle kind of easy wins, because they're finding out that like talk therapy, right? They're finding that that can actually be more triggering. Because you're re-talking about it and you're reliving it and you're kind of just re-keeping yourself in that fight or flight. So I was always looking for like a gentle yet effective kind of way in to help move that needle without having to do, you know, like DRNS I've heard is wonderful for some folks, but for others, it's like an hour a day practice, you know, that you have to do for 6 months before you kind of really start seeing results. And I was just like, I ain't got time for that.
Yeah. I think tapping has been successful for me, and EMDR actually has been really successful for me and one of my kids. So yeah, I think that those are worth exploring. It's one of those things when a listener hears some of these and they maybe read about it and then hear another podcast, you'll start to see things that resonate with you, right?
Absolutely.
So many people ask me today, what is the protocol for your kids now that they have recovered? And our biggest staple is Vital Plan herbs. I even use them for my treatment. It's the only thing I use to treat my Lyme, and I feel amazing. I am so grateful for Dr. Rawls and his brand because Vital Plan herbs are clean, clean, clean. Because of this, my kids never experienced herxing. Low and slow is the name of the game here, and I successfully pulled my daughter off of antibiotics through the use of Vital Plan herbs. The herbs that we are on are in today's show notes, and you can also use my promo code for 15% off. It's simply VeryHappy15. That promo code again is VeryHappy15. So I want to shift gears a little bit. I'm so interested to hear about your journey with healing Lyme and then kind of connecting it with your autoimmune disorders, because I have Hashimoto and I also have Lyme and Bartonella, which I'm treating with herbs. And I also have a wheat allergy. I don't believe to be celiac. My test came back allergic to wheat and like highly sensitive to all these other glutens. But what are these connections? Because I don't even know if I speak to it correctly. I know I have had Hashimoto now for almost 20 years. And since I started taking herbs 7 months ago, I don't have any more nodules on my thyroid. So then I'm thinking, were my nodules bacteria? So break this down for me. What are the connections? Tell me a little bit about your story.
Yeah, I didn't actually have nodules. I had just high antibody numbers. And I am celiac, and I within the past couple of years, found out through Dr. Tom O'Brien and Dr. Peter Osborne that even gluten-free grains actually contain their own form of gluten. So oats actually has their own form of gluten. Rice and corn both have their own form of gluten. And so most folks that have autoimmune diseases, the first thing I do is put them on a paleo type diet, like first and foremost, because our thyroid tissue looks a lot like wheat tissue. And so once our immune system has already tagged wheat as the problem, it's looking for other problems and it sees thyroid, which looks like wheat, and it goes, tag, you're it. And that's where we get that autoimmune towards our thyroid. And then when we eat things like dairy and corn and other grains, it cross reacts like the wheat. And so then it's still keeping that thing perpetual. So people are like, I've been, you know, on a gluten-free diet for years and I haven't eaten wheat in years, but I still haven't gotten anywhere. Well, it's because they haven't gone to that extra layer, sadly, and gone completely grain-free and dairy-free. And that's usually where the real magic happens. And you even have to look into your like health, your home care products. Like I found hydrolyzed wheat protein in my mousse that I was using. Because I had done a wheat zoomer test and it was kind of popping hot in some spots. And I was like, where the hell would I be getting it? And so I started digging through my lotions and makeup and hair stuff and found it in a few spots, found corn in a few spots. And it's absolutely ridiculous. It's sad because that's not common knowledge. People, celiac even, they just tell them to go off of wheat and that's it. And there's so much more to it than that. As far as like the autoimmune Lyme connection, typically I've found with that is it's just autoimmune is a lifestyle disease. Typically you've got some genes that can, you can be more susceptible to it or not, but for the most part, a lot of these can be reversed through lifestyle, and stress is a huge piece of that. And so Lyme, if you have chronic Lyme and other things in your body that's causing an immune response, right? And it's triggered for too long, it's going to leave you more susceptible to getting autoimmune diseases. And so it's very common for folks that have Lyme to also have autoimmune issues.
Yeah. So there are ways to reverse all of this.
Absolutely.
What would be your recommendations? Like what are some things for me to consider? I mean, I feel really great being on the herbs and obviously I've changed my lifestyle. I mean, I feel better at 48 today than I ever did at 38. That's all lifestyle.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to turn 45. And I was just thinking the same thing. I'm like, God, I feel better at 45 than I ever did, you know, when I was 35. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You get it. So what are some things, if someone's listening to this and they have an autoimmune and or Lyme or maybe undiagnosed, like what are some things that we should be thinking about?
Well, first off, like I said, going paleo, dairy-free, grain-free, that whole nine yards, like that's going to be the biggest contributing factor to getting better and staying better and getting your immune system chilled out. And also doing things to support, right? So obviously, if you've got Lyme and you haven't treated it, at some point, you're going to need to treat, right? You just got to get that burden down off your body to where you, that your body can then put it, keep it in its place, right? Also things like selenium and iodine really kind of help to support the thyroid. Our diets are really lacking in iodine these days compared to what they used to be, especially if you ate more fish and you were more coastal, you'd get more iodine in your diet, but it's just really lacking. And then all the radiation that we're getting from exposures with EMFs and plane travel and all that fun stuff. So that it's just a constant bombardment. And so I still take selenium every day. I take iodine. And make sure to keep my, you know, my diet as anti-inflammatory as possible. You know, and I haven't had any issues with a lot of this stuff since. And then heal the gut, because, you know, once you have that leaky gut and you're eating regular healthy foods, but if they get into your bloodstream and they're causing an immune reaction, then it's going to cause collateral damage, right? Because your immune system's trying to go to war with apples and instead it's hitting your thyroid or it's hitting, you know, another part of your body that's going to kind of lead you more susceptible to having an autoimmune disease down the road.
What is the best way to heal the gut? You'd be surprised how many doctors can't help you heal your gut. When you work with your own clients, like, what are some of the steps to heal the gut?
Yeah. And that pisses me off too. I don't know how many people are like, well, I did a food sensitivity test and I'm still, you know, staying away from those foods. And it's like 8 months later. And I'm like, wait, what? They didn't teach you how to heal your gut and then reintroduce those foods? Wait, what?
I've never heard that. Yeah. Tell me more.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. You know, so first off, I teach people how to rotate their diet, because in this high stress, high toxin life, it is going to lead you more susceptible to a leaky gut. And if you're not eating the same thing every day, your chances of getting new food sensitivities go way down. So if I eat beef on Monday, I don't eat beef again until Thursday, right? So learning how to rotate your diet every 4 days. And it was kind of tough in the beginning. And I would just make my 4 day diet and then I would take that and then just complete and just rotate it till I got more creative. And then now, you know, but like on my beef day, I might have beef for lunch and dinner. And then, like I said, I don't have it again until Thursday. And that's really helped keep the inflammation down off my body and me developing new food sensitivities. But then as far as healing the gut goes, it helps to clear up some overgrowth of bacteria, parasites, yeast, right? So a little bit of a kill, but after you've built up the body a little bit. And then when you've cleaned up the gut a little bit, then you can go in with things like mucosal support, probiotics, prebiotics, and actually rebuild the gut lining to help make it tight junctions again instead of leaky gut. So there are things that you can do to help rebuild the gut to get it stronger. And then, like I said, and then rotating your diet to help keep the minimal of developing new food sensitivities down.
I've never heard of that. That's so interesting. Rotating the diet. And then you were talking about probiotics and prebiotics later, like as a phase two. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah. Because I mean, if you think about it, if you've got a terrain and it's mostly covered in bad guys, where's the good guys going to set up shop? They don't have a home. There's no place for them to live, right? So sometimes you kind of got to go in there and you got to clear the path so that the good guys can then set up shop.
Just one more question on the gut, and then I want to move to some other things. One of the things that I had a functional doctor test my whole family for was yeast, and yeast in the gut. And my daughter had it really bad, and she's actually still has yeast issues. first of all, how do you get yeast issues? Like, why do some people have yeast issues and others don't? And how, what is your recommendation for treating yeast?
That's a big question because it's a little differently than what we've been normally taught. So you hear people, and this was me even 10 years ago, go on a candida diet, right? Okay. Cut out all sugar and do this kill protocol. Made myself really sick. But if you do things out of order, you're actually still feeding the candida. So the funny thing is if you don't actually address the parasite and bacteria problem that you have first.
Because that is the problem then ultimately underneath.
Part of it. It's just that it's all symbiotic. They all kind of go together. But the poo from parasites and bacteria will actually feed candida. So even though you're starving yourself from sugar, candida is still getting fed from the excrement of these other critters that you have in your system. Right? So you're killing it off in vain. But also it shows up a lot of times. They're what they call I can't remember the exact name, but they're usually a sign that you've got also problems with heavy metals and other toxins, because once you have a candida and other parasites, why are they there to begin with? They're actually usually there to help mop up some of this other crap that you got going on in your system that you didn't know about.
Interesting.
Right? It's fascinating. And so that's the other problem. So like with me, I always had a massive issue with heavy metals, a lot of mercury in my mouth. I don't detox properly. And so I always had this candida issue, but I would always just attack the candida issue and never realized it was actually a heavy metal issue and mold issue. And so taking care of those two things. And then also I do have to be smarter about my diet. I have to keep it a little lower on the sugar side. I can't go too crazy on carbs because I just have a natural propensity to go that route. And so like right now, I'm actually in the middle of an antifungal protocol because I kind of overdid it over Christmas. And I noticed that my gut was a little out of balance, a little too much of the bad guys, not enough of the good guys. And I knew some yeast problems were coming back. And so then my next step would be to look again at seeing, probably put myself on a couple month, like heavy metal detox again, just to kind of keep everything balanced. Because like I said, with my detox pathways, the way they are, things for me get out of balance very easily.
Yes. But it's so good and empowering to hear that you know your body now, you know the limits, you know when you're pushing and you're tipping over into an area and you know what to do. And everybody ultimately, I mean, that's kind of what the Lyme journey does, or an autoimmune journey, is you need to find your empowerment, sit in your body, understand your body, and that's how you take care of yourself, you know? And we can all do this.
Yep, absolutely.
And you, Heather, had lost 100 pounds through this journey. What do you contribute the weight gain from? I mean, was it slowly building over time? Was it one big time where you had gained a lot, and how did you lose it? I'm sure it's somewhere hidden in this journey.
After puberty, I'd always struggled with my weight. And I think a lot of that had to do with the undiagnosed celiac part of it. And, you know, then the trauma, like, God, I remember hiding in the closet eating, you know, Little Debbie snack cakes, like they were going out of style, and like eating Frosted Flakes, putting sugar on top of my Frosted Flakes. Like, so the diet was just absolute crap. And I wasn't ever taught any better than the standard American diet. You know, they say I was brought up on the TV too, right? And this is a part of a balanced meal. No, that's freaking diabetes in the making is what right, that is.
Totally.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
So a lot of it had to do with the diet, the undiagnosed celiac, the trauma. So I was a stress emotional eater, right? And then after I was diagnosed, like, it was amazing. So the food sensitivity test part, like right off the bat, talk about low hanging fruit. It's amazing. Like 40 pounds, like drop like that.
Wow.
And then supporting my liver, and then getting, because I was a hairstylist. So I was around a lot of obesogens, right? A lot of toxins that lead you to be obese, and it keeps.
That's what you mean by obesogens, like these products.
Yes, these
chemicals.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Perfumes, colognes, scented candles, scented lotions. You know, all this fragrance that's estrogen, you know, causing estrogen dominance. It's getting into receptors that it doesn't allow you to lose weight. You know, so people, so many well-intentioned people, I do all the things and I can't lose any weight, you know, and I can smell them as they walk in the door, the perfume. And I'm like, oh, well, geez, you know, that's you know, the laundry detergents, right? That are scented, that are horrible for the environment and horrible for your health. All of these contribute and add to that toxin overload. And when your body's got too many of those toxins, like I said, it can't lose the weight, because you know where we store toxins in our body? Fat. You know, our fat is there actually to keep you healthy. A lot of times too, people don't realize.
So it's like protective mechanism. So your fat is storing the toxins away from your organs.
Yes. So when you lose weight and you know, you might be toxic. That's the other problem that I found with people is, again, nobody's talking about opening up the detox pathways. So they start to lose weight and then they release these toxins back in there. And then like me, I've always been constipated. So then I was like getting sick after I was losing a lot of weight and I didn't know why. And then once I started to put into place like saunas and coffee enemas and skin brushing, and I got my, detox, pathways, you know, working like a champ, I could lose weight no problem without getting sick. But a lot of times, if you're not feeling good from losing weight, that's a lot of the reason why, is because you've released the toxins back into your system and you're not eliminating them.
Yes. Yes. And I've also heard people like shedding hair losing weight too. I don't know if that kind of is in the same thing, but oh my gosh. Yes. So interesting. So right off the bat, changing your lifestyle, embracing more of the detox environment, you had lost 40 pounds.
Absolutely.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, I wanted to get into just kind of some nitty gritty questions that came from my audience. I had put something out of my stories. I'm like, I'm interviewing the Lime Boss. What do you got? So I hope you don't mind me asking you some questions here. Let's start with this one. If you're treating mold, how do you know when to transition to treating Lyme and Bartonella? And I love this question, Heather, because we're always confused about the order. Can you do everything together? What's your perspective?
Yeah, awesome. Those are like the top three questions that before I even start working with people, that are like the total barriers to health of like, are you living in mold? Have you had a sleep study done and do you have sleep apnea? Because all the best treatment and herbs and everything in the world aren't going to do you a hill of bean of good if you do not get enough oxygen at night when you're asleep. And then three is cavitations. You know, have you had a root canal? Have you had wisdom teeth removed? Because if you've got infections that are locked in your jaw, so close to your brain and your bloodstream, that's also going to not be focused on your troops, right? So when you need your troops to be focused towards Lyme disease, they're scattered because they're dealing with other infections. So mold is a huge one that you really have to rule out. And I love Cellcor for that. The way they set up their protocol is because the first like 4 months, 5 months, they're doing nothing but working on, well, other parasites, heavy metals, and mold before they ever get into actually dealing with the Lyme and the co-infections. But absolutely, it still can be done together. So it's layered in. It's not like you stop one and then you start with the other, you know, right around month, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, right around month 6, 5, 6, you'll start the Lyme protocol on top of the mold stuff that you've been doing.
So you're not necessarily transitioning off mold and into Lyme and Bartonella. It's possible you're layering Lyme and Bartonella on top of mold.
Well, that, and you know, a lot of the mold protocols are a lot of detox and a lot of binders.
Yeah, they are.
You want to keep that in place when you start dealing with the Lyme to help deal with the die-off, right? Like that's just going to keep you from herxing, right? So many folks too, they think that herxing is like a badge of honor and that's the, like the gold standard. And really, if you're doing things low and slow enough, you don't have to herx that bad. It's not great to crash your system. And if you're crashing your system, it's because you're going too fast or you're still living in mold and having some other issues. But I love that. Like I said, I love their protocol because they just really did do it so succinctly about starting slow, making sure your drainage pathways are open. Then they deal with this and then you deal with this and then you deal with that.
Yep.
The only thing I don't like about it is that some practitioners, no different than doctors, right, are just putting people on that treatment, but they're not talking to them about diet and the mindset and the other pieces. Like I met this poor girl who did the whole 9-month protocol, and it's not cheap. And she's like, I still feel like crap. And I'm like, okay, what are you eating? Oh, pizza and blah, blah, pasta. And I was like, I thought my head was going to explode. And she didn't believe me at first. She kind of dismissed me. And then like a month and a half later, I just got a random text from her. You were right. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, about the diet. She's like, I cut all that stuff out and I'm feeling completely different. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all works together.
Yeah. Okay. So it does.
You're just going to focus on that treatment. You're only going to get like 25% better.
It's so interesting because, you know, I was undiagnosed for Lyme. I always had the Hashimoto, and I was started flaring when my kids were young. And all I did was diet. You know, I got myself for a good 6 months, I got off a ton of stuff, gluten, dairy, alcohol, caffeine, sugar. Just for 6 months. And then I always stayed off of gluten. I think though that that diet reset probably saved me from further problems with Lyme. It bought me time is what
absolutely,
it did.
Absolutely.
It bought me time when my kids were babies. Okay. Well, thank you for that question or that answer. Okay. And I think you actually already answered this one. Is thyroid or other autoimmune illnesses Lyme? Or does Lyme cause thyroid issues?
Like I said, a lot of autoimmune is lifestyle, and a lot of the Lyme stuff can contribute to those lifestyle issues for sure.
Thank you.
It's overtaxing your system.
Thank you. Okay, let's talk about rage, kind of like your psych issues, right? And this is what landed me in the world of Lyme, psychotic issues in my child. Is rage Lyme? Or is it something else?
Well, for me, I had Bartonella, and that's a very common. Lyme rage is very, very common with Bartonella. And it used to piss me off so bad because all my life, just count to 10, just do this. And people didn't realize. I'm like, there is no fucking 10. Like, do you understand? Like, something happens and I react.
Me
too. There is no turning back. My 9 times out of 10, it felt like an out of body experience. I could watch myself just be bad. And I'm like, Heather, stop it. Heather, knock it off. Heather, what are you doing? But there was no controlling her until I went back into my body. And then I was left to deal with the aftermath and apologize and cry.
You are speaking my language.
It was horrible.
It is horrible. And I know because I had no compassion or empathy for my daughter who was undiagnosed autistic. I just thought she was being difficult. You know, that's like, I had take accountability for that. And we have reconciled with all of these issues and done therapy, which I encourage everybody to do, family therapy, truly. But it is, oh my God, there's like no off switch. So I get that. So rage typically can be Lyme, but we're seeing so much more of it in Bartonella cases.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Like I said, even in mold is huge for inflaming. Anything that's going to inflame the brain is going to cause more of that anxiety and anger and rage. And if you're inflamed too, there's no buffer. Your buffer is gone because you're inflamed, right? So, that was huge. And it wasn't just until, so after the diet that helped, brain retraining stuff, that really helped. But recently it was the bioenergetic stuff that I said, I feel like I'm in control of my emotions for the first time in my life. Like I can drive down the highway without flipping people off.
Tell us a little bit about, what is it again? You say it, I'm going to say it wrong.
Bioenergetics.
What is that? Highlight that for us.
We are energetic beings. Electromagnetic fields we have, our heart has an electromagnetic field that we can actually measure. That's what we do with an EKG machine. Our brain has its own electromagnetic field. And so just like a symphony, right? You've got different musical instruments, but they're playing in concert and it makes beautiful music. When we're coherent, things are working like that they're supposed to. But when we have like our brain is out or our heart is out, it causes issues in other parts of the body and it causes incoherence in all areas of the body. And so really, like when you really want to talk about root cause of stuff, I found that if a person is out bioenergetically, a lot of the physical stuff that they could be doing isn't going to work as well if they're out with the magnetic fields of the earth, if they're out with the EMF issues, if they're having, you know, detox issues. Like it all works together and it can be measured, and it's heavily rooted in physics, which like it's weird. Intuitively, I understand. And sometimes, obviously, the way I've been stuttering, I have a hard time explaining it eloquently. It was just something that I recently found a couple months ago, back in October. It's completely changed. Like I thought I was humming along pretty awesome. And then I found this work and it's just brought my nervous system down to a whole new level. Like I'm dreaming at night and I'm remembering my dreams for the first time in decades. Oh my God, the amount of peace and like gratitude and love and joy that I'm experiencing, like it's been ridiculous. So I'm a huge believer. I love it. It's just
that's amazing. Like I
said, it's a gentle, effective way to kind of help move the needle.
Love that. Love that. Okay. And then here's one more question from a follower. The best way to test for Lyme if your doctor is not familiar with Lyme?
You know, I go back to that CellCore again. So Dr. Horowitz has an intake form, a questionnaire, and CellCore has a questionnaire. And actually, I usually start off with those two first, because the CellCore one is going to tell me Lyme, co-infections, mold, heavy metals, parasites, SIBO. And then the Horowitz one is going to give me a little bit more of idea of like active or, you know, not active type of infection. But unless people have like $1,000 just to dump on a lab that can or can't be accurate, I don't typically suggest people go that route unless they just absolutely have to for some reason. And if they do, I use the Vibrant Wellness tick-borne panel.
That's what I used. I used Vibrant because I thought it was like the best bang for your buck, especially with it being accurate. Do you need to have a doctor order the Vibrant test, or can you go to other functional practitioners like yourself to order that?
Yeah. I mean, they have to have an account open with Vibrant to do that. And that's, like I said, that's one that I work with. They were doing it to where you could order the lab on your own, and they were giving clients consultations, but they've stopped doing that. And the lab itself could be kind of confusing to read if you don't actually know what you're looking for. I have so many people are like, I got this lab and now I don't know what the hell, what it's telling me. You know, so it is best to try to go through a practitioner, because then that practitioner can help walk you through of like, this is what it's saying. And, you know, here's your next steps.
Right. Wow. Holy cow. Speed round with the Lyme boss. I feel like not just with the questions and answering, but so much of what you've shared today speaks to me. I know that there are going to be listeners here that you're just kind of like planting a lot of seeds. A lot of lights are going off. I know we threw a lot at the audience today, but there's such important issues, you know, autoimmunes, toxin loads, accountability, making sure to take accountability for your healing journey, all that good stuff. Is there anything else you want to add to the list of things that we all need to know if we are in the thick of it all?
Just staying out of denial. You know, one thing I always say is that no matter how common a symptom may be, it is never normal. It is always your body's check engine light coming on saying there's something going on in here. And all too often we take some over the counter or prescription thing, and it's like putting a piece of tape over that check engine light. Don't do that. Like, it's not normal to live with migraines. It's not normal to live with horrible periods. It's not normal to be exhausted all the time. It's not normal to have a face that's breaking out or eczema on your skin. Like, none of these things, even though they're common, they're not normal.
Thank you. So true. Great reminder. And where can a listener find you or reach out to you? Where's the best place?
TheLimeBoss.com. I've got a beautiful free gift of a little mini cooking series called Real Cooking for Real Life. And it's showing you how to make delicious, healthy meals in 20 minutes or less. And then from there, I've got a lot of my podcast episodes up. There's so much free information I put up there and give away. And so dig through that. And then if you want to have a free discovery call, you know, you can reach out through me through there as well.
I love it. Thank you so much, Heather. I feel like I got schooled from the Lime Boss today. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for being on Very Happy Stories.
I'm going to have to put that on a bumper sticker. I got schooled from the Lime Boss.
I'll make that one into a reel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you felt inspired, please submit a review. More reviews help others find Very Happy Stories. And don't forget to subscribe and share this with someone else you know who could use a very happy story right about now. Until next time, have a happy day.
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.